Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts. Here's Daniel's prompt.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. I'm greatly enjoying listening to your episode about steganography. And as frequently happens in the course of listening to your answer to one question, I have another one. So you mentioned in that episode something else that's very topical, and it relates to our discussions about privacy, and particularly digital fingerprinting methods like SynthID, and that is fingerprinting itself. There has been some controversy lately in which Google Chrome, when it moved to increase its use of fingerprinting, and besides how it's actually implemented by companies, the idea itself is very fascinating, that it's possible to track a user simply through a unique aggregation of patterns that they exhibit. And it sounds very, very creepy and menacing that we might think about forms of tracking, like tracking pixels, which is something I'm personally extremely against. But we can, the more nuanced method of companies just being able to piece together these very light individual touch points. It might be that someone uses a certain browser, but actually I'll leave that up to you to explain the actual methodology through which fingerprinting is implemented. But here's what I'd love to get to in the episode. It sounds like an enormous potential threat to our privacy. The way that it's practiced, does it actually mean that our identities are being aggregated by the fingerprinting? Or, you know, it could be, or the way it's implemented is not homogenous. It's going to vary by who's implementing it. But what are some of the potential concerns with this as it's practiced in terms of what can it be used for by companies who are engaging in it?
Hey everyone, and welcome back to my weird prompts. Can you believe it, Herman? We are officially at episode 250.
250. Herman Papa Berry here, and I have to say, Corin, that is a lot of hours spent in this room in Jerusalem talking about everything from shadow webs to sloth biology.
It really is, and it feels fitting that for our 250th, we have a prompt from our housemate Daniel that really digs into the core of how the internet works today, or maybe how it works against us, depending on your perspective.
Right, Daniel was listening to our episode last week on steganography, that was episode 248, and he started thinking about the other side of that coin. Not how we hide messages in images, but how companies hide identifiers in our very behavior. He specifically asked about digital fingerprinting, things like Google's SynthID, and how Chrome is leaning into these methods.
It is a great follow-up because while steganography is often about a deliberate secret, digital fingerprinting is more like an accidental confession. Your browser is basically shouting your identity to every website you visit, even when you think you are being anonymous.
Exactly. And the timing is perfect, because here we are in early 2026, and the landscape of tracking has shifted so dramatically. Most people know what a cookie is, right? That little piece of data a website drops on your computer to remember you. But cookies are like a physical ID card in your wallet. Fingerprinting? Fingerprinting is like your actual physical fingerprint, or the way you walk. You cannot just delete it.
So let's start there, Herman. For the people who might be familiar with the term but not the mechanics, what is the fundamental difference in methodology between a cookie and a digital fingerprint?
It comes down to state versus traits. A cookie is a stateful tracking method. The server says, I am going to give you this specific number, and you show it back to me next time you visit. It is an external object. Fingerprinting is stateless. The website doesn't give you anything. Instead, it asks your browser 100 different questions. What is your screen resolution? What fonts do you have installed? What is your screen resolution? What fonts do you have installed? What is your time zone?
And the idea is that while a million people might have the same screen resolution, only a tiny handful have that resolution plus those specific 42 fonts, plus that specific version of the Brave browser, plus a battery level that is currently at 84%.
Precisely. In information theory, we call this entropy. Each piece of information narrows down the pool of who you could be. If you have enough of these data points, the combination becomes mathematically unique. There is a famous study by the Electronic Frontier Foundation that showed that over 90% of browsers are unique when you look at their fingerprint. And that was years ago. In 2026, the methods have become much more surgical.
Daniel mentioned Syntyde D specifically. Now, that is a bit different from browser fingerprinting, right? That is more about watermarking AI content. How does that fit into this broader conversation about tracking?
It is a brilliant connection on Daniel's part because the underlying philosophy is the same. SynthID is Google's technology for embedding a digital watermark directly into the pixels of an image or the frames of a video or even the metadata of text generated by an AI. It is designed to be invisible to the human eye, but detectable by software.
So it is like a fingerprint for the content itself, rather than the user.
Right, but where it crosses over is when these two systems meet. Imagine you are browsing in Chrome. Chrome is increasingly integrated with Google's AI ecosystem. If the browser can identify Syntyde watermarks in the media you are consuming, and it combines that with your browser fingerprint, Google isn't just tracking where you go. They are tracking the provenance of everything you interact with. They are building a map of how AI-generated information flows through the hands of specific, uniquely identified individuals.
That feels like a massive escalation in how we think about data aggregation. It is not just Korn went to this new site. It is Korn interacted with this specific AI-generated image that we know originated from this specific model prompt. It creates this closed loop of attribution.
And Google is in a unique position because they own the browser, the search engine, the ad network, and the AI models. When Daniel mentioned Chrome's increasing use of these methods, he is likely referring to the way Chrome has been moving toward the privacy sandbox.
Right. The privacy sandbox was supposed to be the replacement for third-party cookies. The pitch was, we are protecting your privacy by not letting individual sites track you with cookies. But critics have been saying for a while now that it actually just centralizes the tracking power within the browser itself.
Exactly. Instead of a dozen different ad tech companies tracking you poorly, the browser tracks you perfectly and then puts you into a group or a cohort. But to make those cohorts work, the browser has to have an incredibly detailed internal fingerprint of who you are. The data doesn't necessarily leave the browser in its raw form, but the fingerprint is still the engine under the hood.
I want to dig deeper into the actual touch points of how this is implemented. You mentioned fonts and screen resolution, but I've read about things that are much weirder, like canvas fingerprinting or even audio fingerprinting. Can you explain how those work?
Oh, canvas fingerprinting is one of my favorites because it's so clever. When you visit a site, it can ask your browser to draw a hidden image on an invisible canvas element. Now, you would think every computer would draw a simple red square the same way, right?
I assume so. It's just code.
You'd be wrong. Because of tiny differences in your graphics hardware, your drivers, and the way your operating system handles subpixel rendering and anti-aliasing, that red square will be slightly different at the pixel level on my computer versus yours. The website then takes a hash of that image, a mathematical summary, and that hash becomes part of your fingerprint. It's essentially using your hardware's unipessions as a signature.
That is wild!
It is like ballistics for computers. The way a gun leaves unique marks on a bullet, your graphics card leaves unique marks on a rendered image. Exactly. And audio fingerprinting does the same thing with the Web Audio API. It asks your browser to process a low-frequency sound wave. The way your software stack processes that audio signal is, again, unique to your specific configuration. You don't hear anything, but the server gets a signature that says, "This is definitely the same machine we saw 3 weeks ago."
It feels almost impossible to escape. Even if I use a VPN, even if I clear my cache, my hardware is still my hardware. My drivers are still my drivers.
That is the threat Daniel was pointing toward. It bypasses all the traditional privacy tools we've been taught to use. Before we get into the really dark side of how companies use this, let's take a quick break.
Good idea. Let's hear from the people who keep the lights on here in Jerusalem.
Are you worried about the invisible rays? Not the ones from the sun. I mean the ones from your neighbor's router. The ones that are currently scrambled egging your brain cells while you sleep. Introducing the Leiblind Sleep Cocoon. It's a 500-pound sarcophagus made of recycled industrial shielding. Just crawl in, bolt the hatch, and enjoy the silence of a total electromagnetic void. Side effects may include claustrophobia, muscle atrophy. The Leiblind Sleep Cocoon, because of the angst. The cannibalic.
Thanks, Larry. I think I'll stick to my regular mattress, despite the scrambled egg risk.
Yeah, I don't think a 500-pound lead box is going to fit in our apartment anyway. Daniel would probably trip over it. Anyway, back to the topic. We were talking about the methodology of fingerprinting. Herman, you mentioned that this is much harder to stop than cookies. If I'm a company like Google or a large data broker, what is the holy grail of how I use this data?
The holy grail is cross-device and cross-contextual tracking without a login. See? If you are logged into your Google account on your phone and your laptop, they know it's you. That's easy. But fingerprinting allows them to link identities even when you aren't logged in.
So if I'm browsing for medical advice on a laptop where I'm not logged into anything but my fingerprint matches a profile they've seen elsewhere?
Bingo. They can link that sensitive medical search to your primary identity. And here is where it gets really concerning regarding the threats to privacy Daniel mentioned. We are seeing the rise of what is called probabilistic matching.
That sounds like they are guessing.
It is a very, very educated guess. They take your browser fingerprint, your IP address, even if it's masked by a VPN, they can sometimes look at the timing of your packets and your behavioral patterns, like how fast you scroll, where do you move your mouse, do you tend to keep 12 tabs open or 2? When you combine the technical fingerprint with a behavioral fingerprint, the accuracy of identifying a single human being across the entire internet approaches 100%.
The behavioral part is what Daniel mentioned as being particularly creepy. That unique aggregation of patterns. I remember reading about how the way people type the rhythm and the latency between certain keys is as unique as a signature.
It is called keystroke dynamics, and most modern browsers have the APIs enabled that allow a website to measure the timing of your key presses down to the millisecond. If you combine your typing rhythm with the way you move your mouse and your hardware fingerprint, you have created a digital ghost that follows you everywhere.
So what are the actual threats here? Beyond just getting more targeted ads for shoes I already bought?
The first threat is the death of the fresh start. In the old days of the web, if you wanted to change your digital persona, you could clear your cookies, change your IP, and start over. Fingerprinting makes that almost impossible unless you literally buy a new computer and move to a new house. It creates a permanent, inescapable record of your behavior.
And that record isn't just held by one company. These fingerprints are traded on data exchanges.
Exactly. Data brokers like Axiom or Oracle have profiles on hundreds of millions of people. If they can tie a fingerprint to a real name, which only has to happen once, then every anonymous action you've ever taken using that fingerprint suddenly has a name attached to it. It's retroactive de-anonymization.
That has massive implications for things like political targeting or even insurance. If a health insurance company can buy data that says this specific fingerprint, which we know belongs to Herman Poppleberry, has been searching for symptoms of a chronic illness on anonymous forums, that could affect your premiums or your coverage.
It's the ultimate information asymmetry. They know everything about you, but you don't even know they are looking. And Daniel's point about Chrome is vital because Chrome is the gateway for most of the world's internet usage. When Google implements things like the Topics API or the Protected Audience API within the privacy sandbox, they are essentially saying, we will handle the fingerprinting so other people don't have to. But that just makes Google the ultimate gatekeeper of our identities.
It's like they are saying, we'll protect you from the small-time crooks by making sure only the biggest bank in town has the keys to your house.
That's a great way to put it. And there is a second-order effect here that people rarely talk about. As fingerprinting becomes more sophisticated, it creates a disincentive for browser innovation. If you use a niche browser because you want more privacy or better features, you actually make yourself more unique. You stand out more in the crowd.
Right, the herd immunity problem. If everyone uses Chrome on Windows, then being a Chrome on Windows user doesn't tell them much. But if you are the only guy in Jerusalem using a hardened version of Firefox on a Linux machine with a specific screen resolution, you are the easiest person in the world to track.
It's the paradox of privacy. To be anonymous, you have to be boring. You have to look exactly like everyone else. But our computers are increasingly personal. We customize them. We have different hardware. We have different extensions. Every time you add a browser extension to protect your privacy, you are actually adding another unique bit of information to your fingerprint.
That is so frustrating. So, Daniel's concern about this being menacing is pretty well founded. What about the potential for state actors? If a government can get access to these fingerprint databases, they can track dissidents or journalists, even if they are using tools like Tor, right?
Tor is actually one of the few tools that specifically tries to fight this. The Tor browser is designed so that every single user has the exact same fingerprint. They all have the same window size, the same fonts, the same reported hardware. It's called letterboxing. But even then, there are advanced techniques like website fingerprinting where an observer can look at the size and timing of encrypted packets and guess which website you are visiting just based on the pattern of data.
It really feels like an arms race where the defense is constantly 5 years behind the offense.
It is. And the offense is now being powered by the kind of AI that Google is watermarking with Synthede. Imagine an AI model that is trained specifically to look at massive datasets of fingerprints and find the subtle links that a human would miss. We are moving toward a world of identity by inference.
Okay, so we've painted a pretty bleak picture. But this is my Weird Prompts, and we like to give people something to chew on. What are the practical takeaways? If someone is listening to this in 2026 and they are worried about their digital fingerprint, what can they actually do?
Number one, use a browser that takes fingerprinting protection seriously. Brave and Firefox have built-in protections that try to randomize or blank certain fingerprinting vectors. For example, they can give a website fake data about your fonts or your canvas rendering.
But doesn't that make you look unique because you are the guy giving fake data?
Sometimes, yes. It's a trade-off, but it's better than giving them the real, permanent signature. Number two, limit your browser extensions. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but every extension you install is a loud signal in your fingerprint. Only keep what you absolutely need.
What about the hardware side? Is there any way to mask that?
Not easily, but you can use different devices for different parts of your life. I have a dirty laptop for general browsing and a clean tablet that I use for things I want to keep more private. By splitting your activity across different hardware, you are creating multiple fingerprints that are much harder to link together.
And I think there is a policy takeaway here too. We need to start thinking about fingerprints not just as technical data, but as biometric data. If the law treated a browser fingerprint the same way it treats a physical fingerprint or a DNA sample, the companies collecting this stuff would be under a lot more scrutiny.
Absolutely. In the European Union, under the General Data Protection Regulation, there is a strong argument that a unique fingerprint is personal data, but in much of the rest of the world, it's still the Wild West. Daniel's question about how companies use this data, they use it because it's unregulated and incredibly effective.
It's the perfect tracking mechanism because it's invisible. Most people don't even know it's happening. They think because they didn't click accept cookies, they are safe.
And that's the most important takeaway. Awareness. Just knowing that your hardware has a voice and it's constantly talking to the websites you visit changes how you interact with the web. It makes you realize that incognito mode is really just don't save my history mode. It doesn't make you invisible to the sites themselves.
Right. It's like wearing a mask, but keeping your name tag pinned to your shirt.
Exactly. I think we've covered a lot of ground here. We went from the basic entropy of a font list to the pixel-level imperfections of a graphics card, and all the way up to Google's master plan with the privacy sandbox and Cindy.
It's a lot to take in, but I think it's essential for understanding the web in 2026. Daniel, thanks for sending that one in. It was a perfect topic for our 250th episode. It really gets to the heart of the weird hidden layers of our digital lives.
It really does. And hey, if you've been listening for a while, maybe you've been with us since episode 1, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or whatever podcast app you use. It genuinely helps other people who are interested in these deep dives find the show.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. We love doing this, and we love the community that's grown around these weird prompts. You can find all our past episodes, including the ones we mentioned today, at myweirdprompts.com. There's a contact form there too if you want to send us a prompt of your own, though usually Daniel beats everyone to it.
He's very fast with the voice notes. All right, Korn, I think I'm gonna go check my browser fingerprint now and see just how unique I am. I'm guessing very.
You've always been one of a kind, Herman Poppleberry.
Guilty as charged. This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
Take care, everyone. Stay boring, stay anonymous.
Or at least try to. Bye!
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.